Hello, I am Greg Livingston, here with Michael Cowden, talking about his game Super 80s World. And Mike, for those of us not familiar with the game, could you explain what the gist of it is?
Sure. So the idea, it's kind of a side-scrolling runner-style game. And well, the idea is that you're sent back in time to the 80s and you have to save the decade. And so every year is a different world that you have to go through in order to kind of bring, it's full of nostalgia and that sort of thing. So that's the general idea of the game, yeah.
Okay. That's a pretty cool idea. I didn't realize that each year was going to be its own stage.
Yes, yeah. So it'll be, like one year might be a Miami Vice world, another year would be, an old school arcade, things like that. So bringing up these different themes from each, from the 80s and kind of incorporated that into this timeline as you travel through the decade.
So, as you mentioned, the game is an auto-scroller, and because the game scrolls on its own, players can't stop, they can't observe challenges and take them at their own pace as they might in a normal platformer. Instead, you have a short time frame to react to stuff. So, as you're developing this auto-scroller, how do you find a good spot where players have enough time to react to oncoming challenges?
Yeah, that's certainly something that, we've been kind of learning about as going through this process. And I think even simple things like the dimensions of the device you're on make a huge difference. I've been playing the game a lot on my phone, using 16:9 is kind of the dimensions that I'm used to working with, which gives you, it's a widescreen format. It gives you a lot of time to react as things are coming at you. And then you put something on an iPad, and all of a sudden, you have a lot less space to work with. So, there's simple things like just, one of the lessons learned in going through that is maybe we need to letterbox the game so we have, a consistent aspect ratio that we're working with, But the other thing is I think these sorts of games become about games about rhythm, and kind of pattern and like recognizing things and kind of getting into that zone where you kind of know what's coming next. The original game was actually a full-on platformer, and it was just too much for mobile. Having a joystick on the screen and everything else, it's just really tough.
Yeah, so, I saw your old trailer and had this really goofy-looking guy traveling across a rainbow and stuff.
Yeah. So that was, that was kind of version one of this, and then the first thing we learned as we put it in people's hands was, maybe platformers don't translate that well to mobile. So the idea was to strip it down a bit. There's also, as you may or may not know, there's also like a tilt aspect where you can speed up or slow down the game. That's another thing that all these little elements kind of, we're trying to figure out how to phase them into the game so people get used to them. If you hit people with everything all at once, sometimes it can be a little challenging. But a lot of that, I'm still playing around with the mechanics and trying to make sure that people have enough time to react to it exactly like you're saying. And I think the best I can explain it is like trying to create that rhythm as you're going. So you feel like, okay, I jump a couple of times, I slide, I do this, that, whatever the mechanics are you're working with, you almost get that rhythm down as you're playing it.
Right. So what you're mentioning there is kind of a, you get a sense of pattern recognition and you can get into kind of a muscle memory flow.
Yeah. And I think another part of it too may be having some way of like foreshadowing what's coming next. So I've thought also about maybe flashing like, a color or something on the side of the screen. Some of the enemies throw objects. So like that can also be a way of knowing, I know what's coming because here comes, this cassette that this guy, he's got a stereo on his shoulder and he's a boombox, and he's throwing cassettes at you. Things like that can help as well.
So you've also mentioned that you can adjust the speed by tilting the tablet or device. So that's interesting in that players can cater the gameplay to their skill.
Yeah, one of the things we found with that is, so we've tried it both ways. We were at a conference, we had some folks coming by. We found that people were really struggling because it's not super noticeable because the speed is subtle. And they're also, you know, if you're going faster, you can jump farther. So you can you only really jump over some enemies when you when you're going faster. So we tried it the second day without it, or the third day we were there without that, in order to just see. We got a lot less questions. I don't know if that means it was better or not. But I think right now the way I'm looking at it is, it's either going to be like there'll be a simple mode where you can go without being able to tilt it, or it'll be something that you introduce later in the game as a way, you know, after some of the basic mechanics are introduced. But what's interesting about that is it's a different type of feel to the game. You know, as you play it, you know, you kind of go fast and jump, and then you tilt back to watch what's going on. Then you tilt fast again, and you kind of jump. And even when you're in the air, you can tilt and kind of control where your player can land. And I think people who are a little more serious gamers, they thought that was fun. They liked having that control to be able to do it. But I think a lot of the folks who come by and maybe are not as serious about gaming, you know, they really wanted something very simple. A lot of the games that people are seeing on mobile nowadays are, you know, one button control kind of things, and people really do keep it simple.
Right. I can imagine, you know, having to keep track of how you're holding a device would just be another layer of complexity.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is something that someone who plays video games a lot would be used to, but not...
Right.
Yeah. Also, how much variation do you get out of the timing? You mentioned timing with the player controls, but do certain enemies demand quicker reaction times than others?
Yeah, so there'll be... Right now, it's really more that certain enemies have movement. Certain enemies are coming at you. Some of them are kind of following a basic pattern. Some of them are throwing things at you. So some of them are kind of, again, you have these two controls, primary controls in the game right now, or you can jump and you can jump and land on enemies to kill them, or you can jump over them. Same with obstacles. And then you have other enemies you can slide to kill or slide underneath of if they're throwing something at you or if there's something above you. So a lot of it is more of a switch up between jumping and sliding. And again, there's a recognition of, okay, certain enemies you can slide to kill, other ones you have to jump. So I think the timing is more in how you approach the different enemies, and in some cases what their hit zones are, to figure out how and whether or not they're moving as to how difficult they are.
Right, and that when you slide kick an enemy, you have a much bigger window than when you're trying to jump on them.
Yeah, that was some other feedback we got. I've actually shortened the window a little bit with that, because some of the feedback we were getting was that folks were kind of wondering how to get out of the slide, or they say it's kind of like an infinite slide, and so it seemed to me that the slide didn't feel like a control that you had. It felt like a mode you went into. And so we kind of shortened that up a little bit in order to jive with the expectations people had.
Can you cancel the slide with a jump?
Yes, you can. So you can jump out of a slide, yeah.
Okay. So you've mentioned the game has a pretty simple move set. You just have a jump and a slide kick. And I guess my first question here is how you varied the game's challenges, and you already mentioned that.
Well, no, I think it's still an interesting question, because over time, if all you can do is jump and slide, it's going to get pretty boring, right? And so that's the starting set. But the idea is that as you go along, you'll have other vehicles or other abilities you can do. For instance, you'll be able to acquire like a skateboard. And then with the skateboard, you might be able to do something extra. The main thing is there might be like a double jump capability, or if you like jump and then slide, it's some other kind of, you know, you'll do an air kick or something like that. So there will be extra, we'll kind of layer things on. There's also going to be a hover mode where like you'll get a hoverboard, and you'll be able to tilt up and down in order to control where you are. So there's a lot of things. I'm actually right now just in the process of putting together kind of a matrix of all the different capabilities the main character is going to have, and figure out how to phase that over the course of the game, so you don't get bored kind of doing the same thing over and over.
Part of how you'll develop and expand the challenges over the course of the game will be through expanding the player's moveset, and the player will then have to learn this new ability and use it against the upcoming challenges.
Yeah, yeah, that's accurate. And on top of that, too, I think ideally also we're going to be doing some like mini games. So try to incorporate that in as well, just to break the monotony.
Okay. as for the moves that I've seen so far, the jump and the slide, they both have an offensive ability in that you can use them to attack enemies, mm-hmm. but they also have a defensive purpose where you can jump over stuff or slide under stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How has this influenced the challenges that the player faces? Do you usually design enemies to be avoided, be attacked, or would you say that enemies have a single solution or that there's a number of approaches?
Yeah, I see what you're asking. So that's interesting. I think originally, so a lot of the enemies that you see now, they came from this version of a platformer version. So it's mostly about jumping over, jumping on things, kind of Mario style game, right? Now, as I was playing through the game, one of the things is you kind of forget as you design a game and you spend so much time working on it, what part of this is fun? Like what's fun about this? What do I enjoy? And like, you know, jumping on and bouncing off of enemies is fun, slide tackling enemies, like basically killing your enemies is fun. So it's like, you know, how do we bring that into it? So kind of the way I think about it is mostly like a way of staggering enemies. That's like an interesting, where you're kind of reacting in these two modes of like, what are the things I need to jump over and slide under as I go through this and pass through this, but also providing these little parts where, you know, you'll get multiple kills like in a row or something like that, or dropping in power-ups and things like that to keep it interesting as you go along.
So there will be a difference between like the skill floor and the skill ceiling, where an inexperienced player might make it through and a more experienced player might be able to do something stylish.
Yeah, absolutely. If you just want to speed through the game and just avoid the obstacles, that's one tact. If you want to go through it and kill everything in your way, that'll be another, you know. So definitely different ways of playing through it.
Okay. There is also a ton to collect. I've noticed so far that there's tapes and tokens. And I wanted to ask how you place those. Like, what is your goal for the player when you put a tape or some tokens in?
Sure. So the idea with the collectibles, so the tokens are, you know, I think pretty common in a lot of these games. And the idea with that will be eventually that at collecting these tokens, you'll be able to buy new abilities or new outfits or, you know, the sort of things that you do in these games. Whereas the other collectibles, the memorabilia, the VCR tapes or the cassette tapes or the old, like, you know, NES style cartridges that you're collecting, the idea there is as you're going through the game, you know, there's a story to it. There's this guy who hates the 80s. He grew up getting picked on in that decade, and he's just found a way to wipe the decade from our collective consciousness. So here's this bad guy that's trying to make the 80s go away. And the main character, the hero of this story, is this guy who has never left the decade in spirit. He still sports a mullet and you know, all of this. You know, he's going to be the guy that goes back and rescues the decade. And the way he has to do it is by collecting all this old memorabilia to save each individual year. So, you know, as he's going through 1985, you know, he'll collect a copy of Back to the Future on VHS tape, and he'll collect, you know, some old cassette of like a band from the time. So that's kind of the progression through the game, is that you collect those items in order to be able to move on, or maybe you continue to move on to the next level, but if you don't collect enough of them, then you don't save that year. That year goes into oblivion. So that's kind of the idea behind it.
And it looks like they're placed in tricky spots or somewhere in the open.
Yeah, so there'll be, you know, some of them are just going to be rewards, you know, you'll get through a bunch of stuff and then here's, you know, something at the end. There's also ways to collect them. There's also, when you kill enemies in the game, there's random drops. So those enemies can drop, you know, a bunch of coins, or they can drop one of these cassette tapes or VHS tapes, or they can drop, you know, a continue for the game. So there's things like that as well that, you know, hey, if you're going through and playing a certain way, there's certain rewards for doing it that way. But as you play through, there'll be, you know, enough to collect to keep it interesting for you, you know, so that if you were to just speed play it, maybe you wouldn't save that year, but it wouldn't be a big deal. You'd still have fun doing it.
Right. If you want a simple, shallow experience, it's there for you. And if you want to explore that depth, it's also there
yep.
for you.
Yeah.
All right. And I've noticed that this game will be released on both PC and mobile, right?
So really, the thing I'm targeting right now is mobile. PC, I've left myself open on just because there's been a lot of interest, but I just want to see how it goes with mobile first. I'm making it in a platform independent way. I'm using Unity to develop the game. So it's really more about, you know, how much time do you want to spend supporting a bunch of different platforms? And so it's, you know, and I've made PC versions of the game for other folks to try out, press and things like that. A lot of folks who are serious gamers are playing most of their games on the PC. So that's one of the main reasons. I've thought about doing it as like a PC game that's pay what you want or something like that. I haven't figured that whole thing out yet. I'm really, at this point, targeting mobile first and trying to figure out how quickly I can just get something out there and start getting some feedback on it.
Okay. Are there any sites or social media accounts we should stalk if we want to find out more?
Yeah, so, you know, the best way, we have a website. It's super80sworld.com. It's the 80, not spelled out, 80s. So super80sworld.com. And if you go on there, there's a link to join a beta list or our mailing list. That's probably the best way. We're looking at doing maybe every few months doing an update and getting versions out for people to take a look at and give us feedback on. And we've gotten great ideas from folks with that. So it's a great way to, if it's something you're interested in, to be a part of the process as well. And then, you know, we've got a Facebook account. It's facebook.com/super80sworld and twitter.com/super80sworld. We're probably most active on Twitter. Those are the best ways to find out more and keep in touch.
Nice. And last but not least, when it comes to game design, which is the most important? The game itself, the intent of the designer, or the experience of the player?
The experience of the player is the most important, because if you don't have if you don't have a positive experience with the player, or if there isn't an experience of the player to even talk about, then the intent, you know, your intent going into it, it feels to me like it didn't work, right? Because at the end of the day, this has to be a game that people enjoy. This has to be, and hopefully the people who are playing the game feel like they get the point that you're trying to get across. So they, you know, with this game, you know, it's a silly game in a lot of ways, but it's, you know, it's a nostalgia play. It goes on the whole pixel art thing, and it's trying to like pull back, kind of take the entire decade of the 80s and put it into like this campy little game. I want people to feel that, you know, feel like, oh, this is kind of cool. This, you know, this nostalgia thing, or this, hey, the 80s were fun and kind of crazy, and this is a neat way to play with that and look at it. So I'd have to say, yeah, the experience of the person playing the game is the most important thing, because if you're not targeting that, then you might be making a game that's just for you and no one else is going to enjoy.
So the game is this medium for communication between you and the player.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that I've noticed personally just from getting out and watching other people play the game. You learn so much so quickly that when you're just working in a vacuum, it's hard to pick up on, you know?
Yeah, I gotcha. Thank you for joining me, Mike.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thanks a lot.